Christopher Media, unregimented.
He can write a song. He knows how to write a pop hook. Man can write a song. Man, you can't deny him that.
He can work a DCG chord progression.
You're right. I cannot deny that what he wrote were songs.
Unregimented on iTunes and ChristopherMedia.net. Christopher Media, let's make some noise.
That doesn't sound like me.
All right. Should we get this show on the road?
Yeah, let's do that.
Christopher Media, let's make some noise. From Asthma Core Studios near Detroit, Michigan.
Oh, man.
It's the Weedsman Podcast.
I have no idea what's going on.
And now...
You have smoked yourself retarded.
Here are the Weedsmen.
You want to get high?
Hello again.
Yes, I do.
Hello.
Fellow cannabis Americans.
You gonna make a speech yeah. right now?
No, yes. That's a phrase, and I'm coining it. Damn it, we're gonna ride that one. See what happens.
I like it.
I'm Chris.
I'm Rob.
I'm Aaron.
Hey, this is the Weedsman Podcast.
Welcome.
Like the man said.
Yep.
We'll be joined today by the fifth Weedsman, Mr. Robert St. Mary. Actually, probably as soon as whenever we want to call him, he's gonna hang out the whole show today.
Oh, really?
So if you don't like Rob,
I don't like him at all. Get him out of here.
If you don't like people named Rob, there's going to be two of them on this show. So
yeah. Definitely want to avoid this one.
But we're going to be talking about the movies, the Oscars, stoner stereotypes.
Right.
All kinds of stuff.
All that good stuff.
You want to do the strain first and call him?
Yeah. That sounds like a plan.
I told him we are ready. But sure. Yeah. Let's do the strain while we're waiting on Rob.
All right. Well, this week's strain, we are getting our information from WikiLeaks. Is kosher
WikiLeaks? Are we going to be on a list?
WikiLeaks. I'm sorry, WikiLeaks.
Oh man,
let me get that right. Make sure we give the
don't talk about WikiLeaks.
WikiLeaks.
You end up like Snowden. What's his name? Assange.
Right. Well, the strain this week, like I said, was kosher Kush, and it reads as follows: Kosher Kush is mostly indica hybrid. It has won the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in 2012. So it's a award winner, and it has a distinction of being the first commercial strain blessed by a rabbi. I don't know. The blessing is thought to bring both enlightenment and the state of blissful tranquility. This strain produces a powerful but lazy body buzz that can leave novice users quite sedated, but it also lifts their moods with its sativa-based cerebral effects. New users warn that great caution should be exercised when using this strain, as the sleepiness can be overwhelming. This attribute, however, makes Kosher Kush effective for treating insomnia, restlessness, and caused by anxiety and stress. Patients dealing with the pain may also find it helpful due to the numbing body effects. So, sounds like it'll actually help you get a good night's rest. Oh.
Oh.
The man is calling.
Speaking of Jews, Rob, not a Jew.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Hello.
There we go.
You hear me? You son of a bitch.
Yeah, there we go.
Hello.
Hello again, sexies.
Right.
Hello.
It's Rob St. Mary from the projection booth. It's the projection booth's Rob St. Mary. All right, so the Oscars happened.
Yeah, but before that, I want to call you to task, Mr. Chris here.
Uh-oh.
Because on a previous episode, you said something that isn't kosher, and not only that, shows complete arrogance and ignorance of our show, which is on your fabulous network.
Oh, Jesus. All right.
Whoa.
Here we go.
You ready for this?
Let's do it.
You said that Saturday Night Fever wasn't any good.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
If you ever looked at my DVD collection, you shouldn't listen to my movie advice.
I don't know if you could tell that through the audio, but I threw my lighter down when he said that. That was a bridge too far.
Because we just did an episode on this, smart guy.
Oh no, I know.
And the one thing that I realized up until about a year and a half ago is I thought it was this frothy little disco movie from the late 70s filled with John Travolta's hair and a bunch of people in, you know, polyester. But no, actually, there's a lot more that's going on to it. It's actually a pretty dark little film. And it's got a lot of going on there about, like, class and and gender roles and all kinds of stuff. There's a rape in the movie. There's drug use. There's probably a half dozen ethnic slurs that John Travolta says in that movie that he probably would not say today in any other script. There's a lot going on in that movie, much more than I think
Dude, Where's My Car is a good movie, all right? So
hey, you know what? You know, so be it.
So there's all you need to know about me and my movie tastes. All right.
See, that's why I do the movie segment. So there you go.
Yep.
Yeah. There you go.
No, I agree with everything you just said there, and I still believe it has a kick-ass soundtrack. But yeah, I love the Bee Gees.
Yeah. Why not?
Can't help it.
So you should go over to projection-booth.com or go to christophermedia.net and check out the Projection Booth and listen to that episode on Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah.
Or because I need the download numbers, damn it.
Yeah. Or the most recent one. I mean...
The 7-hour Conan?
7 hours of Conan the Barbarian.
Which I'm not on. So enjoy it. Free of me.
Oh, not Conan the Librarian?
Oh, we referenced that in there. Yeah. But like I said, I'm not on the episode this week. So, but it is a good listen. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there. The guy who wrote the Conan comics and did early passes on both scripts of Conan the Destroyer. Several of the actors. A guy who wrote a book on Conan.
Any interesting stuff over there. Conan O'Brien at all, or
no? Sadly,
I'm gonna have to check that one out because I'm a pretty big Conan fan, actually.
7 hours,
and I read some of the books as a kid. I got really into the comic books. Of course, that was like one of the first places I could see boobs as well in the Conan books. Yeah, and there's always some like floozy wearing some armored bra or no bra at all.
Yeah.
Is that a podcast record?
7 hours? I don't think so. There was it was the guy who was the former co-host with Mike has his podcast that he does, and he did one that's 10 hours on Norman Mailer's Tough Guys Don't Dance. So
10 hours?
Yeah, of all the movies to do a 10-hour podcast on. And he also charges you to listen to it. So he wants like $3 for you to take that in.
Charges
so.
By the minute. Yeah. You just watch it like going up like you're driving in a taxi.
Yeah. It's the longest show we've done. Before that, the longest show that we did was actually right around Christmas. We did a 4-hour and 20-minute one on Batman Returns and all the stuff related to Batman. See, but my whole take on podcasts is about what I call the Fight Club rule, that the podcasts only go on as long as they have to. So if the film deserves an hour, it deserves an hour. If it deserves 7 hours, then it deserves 7 hours. And if it moves, that's all that matters. Because believe me, I've listened and watched things that are an hour long and they feel like 7 hours. They're just terrible. Yeah. So, you know, as long as it's engaging and it moves, that's the key. So... And that's what we try to do over there. Although, like I said, once again, I'm not on this episode, so enjoy it Rob-free.
Right. Well, that's kind of the brilliance of the format of a podcast, too. You don't have to be, we have to make this a half-hour segment, we have to make this an hour-long segment. You can go as long as you need to.
Yeah, and I have a friend of mine who has a podcast on another network, and I'm not going to mention it. No, I'm just kidding. He was like, really, guys? Like, 7 hours? Isn't that really kind of getting out of line? And I was like, well, you know, the great thing about it is you can turn it on and turn it back, you know,
listen
to it on and off. You don't have to listen in one chunk. It's not like, you know, being in radio where it's like, oh, I only got an hour. And back in the old days before podcasting and, you know, digital distribution, it was, well, I got to tune in at 3 o'clock, otherwise I'm going to miss my show.
You catch the beginning of that one on your way home and you're in your driveway all night listening to the Conan show.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the thing is because it's not radio, it's radio-like.
Right.
Who says there are rules? Like, why can't we do whatever we want? You know? So that's what I've always been about.
No, I hear you. Listened to a new podcast the other day. It's Dennis Miller and Adam Carolla, and I'm hearing them going back and forth talking about trying to keep it PG-13.
Yeah.
People who are running it so they can get more sponsors. And I'm sitting there thinking, isn't that fucking everything against what podcasting is all about?
Well,
like you're not supposed to be beholden so much to these people, and you can do whatever you want. And
yeah, it is them doing what they want, though, because they're making the decision to censor themselves in order to increase their audience. That's them making that decision, not someone else putting that decision upon them.
Yeah, but still, it, you know, I mean, as a radio guy, and the other man in the room there also used to work in commercial radio, there's a certain level of what the format represents, you know, in that with a podcast, it should be wide open. You should be able to basically do whatever you want.
Yeah, it seems disappointing that the whole you're going to have to censor yourself to bring in dollars mentality is going to come into this medium. It seems kind of disheartening a little bit to me.
But to be honest, that's anything. I mean, I mean, that's just the nature of the beast. If, you know, if you want to make the most amount of money, you know, there's really, I mean, when we talk about film, there's really two ways to go, right? You can either make an R-rated film or you can make a kid's movie, because in order for the kid to go to the movie, they got to bring their parents. So, you know, you just got three admissions or two admissions instead of one. So I think there's a certain level of them. You know, I mean, they're old broadcast guys, too. I mean, they're both on TV and radio and all of that stuff. So, you know, I don't necessarily know that they – but he's an exception when it came to the satellite thing, was when you had Stern going, okay, I'm leaving terrestrial radio because I'm tired of putting up with, you know, the restraints. But he had a big enough name that I'm sure the sponsors that went with him were more than glad to give him the money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And too, I guess with Howard, it's part of his shtick.
Yeah.
Well, I think
away with that.
Yeah, I think that's part of the attraction of Adam's show as well. And you might see the exact opposite reaction from that. You might not see their listenership climb because they're just not as because they're not swearing like they do on the other podcasts. You know?
Yeah, I started listening to that show, and to be honest, it's one of the first times in recent memory I've been able to enjoy Dennis Miller again, because I kind of felt like he lost his mind after September 11th and was not very funny after then. So, but he's, you know, on that show, it's pretty good.
Well, yeah, when he started becoming a lot more vocal about his political opinions, not that he was shying away from it in the past, but he just, it became more of his act. His act became more about his personal beliefs on politics, and it's just hard to disagree with somebody 100% and still find them funny.
Well, I mean, and the whole thing too is that comedy always comes out of the place of the underdog, you know. It comes out of the place of those who are trying to change the system, those who are being put under by the system, you know. To come out and, you know, basically go, yay, everything's great, doesn't lend itself to great satire. You know, it's usually the people who are marginalized and bitter who come up with the best stuff. I mean, look at, you know, like Richard Pryor, or, you know, people like him. I mean,
overcoming things in your life, obstacles, that's what I was trying to think of. Overcoming obstacles in your life, especially early on, seems to do well to create art in general, or artists, rather.
Yeah.
Once I get comfortable is when the shit starts.
Well, I mean, it also goes to the question of being bound by expectation, which is the one trap of any artist, you know, and part of the reason why I've always liked The Residents, because of their whole concept of the theory of obscurity, the idea that if you're unknown and you're unbound by expectation because of that, you can do whatever you want. So their whole thing has always been never to give the audience any persona to attach themselves to, you know.
Their
because it's like,
no,
oh,
gimmick.
You're Paul McCartney, you're in the Beatles, so therefore everything should sound like X. Well, maybe not. Maybe he doesn't want to make everything sound like X. But since he's a personality, he's now bound by our expectations.
What did you think about the Oscar winners this year, Rob?
It was pretty much dead on for me. I sat down and I put the list down, and the only one that I got wrong that was kind of a shocker was Eddie Redmayne as Best Actor for the whole Theory of Everything there. Because I think that they were going to go more in the vein of Michael Keaton.
Yeah, I agree with you on that one.
Yeah, sure. And then if not Michael Keaton in Birdman, I thought Steve Carell did an amazing job in Foxcatcher.
Yeah,
Foxcatcher was amazing.
That was like the only one that I didn't see of the winners this year.
All right, Rob, I'm taking a poll. What do you think of Birdman?
What I think of Birdman?
What is your opinion of Birdman?
I liked it. I saw it twice, and actually, I think I liked it better the second time. I think visually it's stunning in terms of the fluid camera movement and all of that stuff. I think Michael Keaton does a hell of a performance, and when you add the background that most of the audience would have that he was Batman and kind of play with that idea that it's kind of him and kind of this character at the same time. And then, I just thought it was really well done.
Okay.
Overall.
Okay, you're first person.
And I like the magical realism. I don't want to ruin it for anyone. But there's a bit of it in the trailer with him, you know, meditating and floating.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But the ending is really magical realism and probably pissed a lot of people off, especially those who are going to go see it at the multiplex in the suburbs.
Oh, right.
Well, you are the first person to give it a positive review that I've asked. Because the general consensus I've gotten until you has been it's a great movie that I don't need to see ever again.
That is not a negative review. There's plenty of movies that I've seen and enjoyed and just don't have a desire to go and watch it again. There's just too many movies out there. I enjoyed Birdman very much. I don't have any desire to sit down and watch it.
But like
a decade passes, I go, oh yeah, that Birdman movie. I'll sit down and watch it.
But if you truly enjoy something, wouldn't you want to be like, oh man, I want to go see that thing again and again?
No, because then I'd be doing nothing but watching movies my whole life.
Well, I mean, there's another thing where, you know, I've seen movies and go, wow, that's really good, but I don't need to see it for another 10 years. And the reason is that it is very emotionally draining, or it's very hard to watch.
Yeah.
You know, like for
Irreversible?
Example, I mean, in that kind of vein, I mean, I would go back to
Requiem
to
for a Dream.
That's, I mean, Requiem for a Dream, I can watch every couple of years. That doesn't bother me that much.
Yeah, Requiem for a Dream or Trainspotting. They're striking movies.
See, I'll keep
going back to them.
I'm good with once. I'm Requiem for a Dream. Same thing, also, too. Same director, Pi. I only had enough energy to see that movie once.
That was it.
My head felt like it was going to explode when I saw Pi.
The one that's very,
just watch Eraserhead.
The one that's very contentious among film geeks is Pasolini's Salo, which is an Italian film, and it was an adaptation of a Marquis de Sade book, 120 Days of Sodom. And it's a tough film to watch because of the subject matter, and he makes you like linger on these horrific kind of images. I mean, the whole idea is he updates this story of the four pillars of society round up these kids. They take them to a villa and basically rape and torture them in the final days of World War II. That's the film. You know, I'm going to give you a synopsis. Yes, it is. It's kids' fair, children's movie. But it's such a it's a harrowing watch because the stuff is unflinching. It's very difficult. I mean, people sometimes have problems with things like Hostel or whatever, you know, that kind of torture porn kind of stuff. It's kind of like that, but it's even more clinical and has a real aspect to it.
Right, because Hostel will throw a lot of edits and cuts, so you can't really tell what's going on. This is more of like...
But what I tell people is, I go, it's like going to an art museum and seeing a great painting that's very disturbing, and it's supposed to be disturbing, and that's the thing I tell them, is I go, if you go into that movie and you laugh your ass off all the way through it and come out and go, oh, that was lovely, guy, I can't wait to see that again, then you really have a problem. Like, I compared it to, there's this painter who did like a whole series on the Holocaust and these scenes of like the Holocaust, and his name's Jerome Witkin, and I said, you know, it's kind of like, I appreciate Jerome Witkin, but I don't want him over my sofa. You know, I just don't want to live with him in that way. And that's how I feel about certain films that are very hard to watch. But what you're talking about, Chris, the idea of Birdman being, you know, hey, it should be, you know, you should want to watch it again. I really think that the magical realism in there throws a lot of American audiences. I think it's a very European sensibility. Or even one of my favorite directors, Luis Buñuel. I mean, it's very surrealist and absurdist at times. And I think a lot of times American, you know, mainstream audiences are very much into sort of ABC narrative, and everything makes sense in the end. And we all go home and we get in the car, and by the time we get home, we can't even remember what the fuck we just saw.
You know?
You know?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of comments like it wasn't about anything.
Yeah. Sure. Well, actually, no, it is about something. It's about it's about an artist who's trying to figure out if he's relevant anymore. It's about a guy right. who has passion for something, and he's willing to sacrifice all of these things in his life. It's about another artist who's completely fucked up and insecure and puts his wife and everyone through hell because mm-hmm. he can't get his shit together. You know, I mean, there's so many different tangents in there. There's so many different things that I think anyone can kind of relate to it overall. If we're talking about themes.
Absolutely.
It's like a novel.
Right. Right. And, yeah. and but so concise. I mean, part of why I, if it was more obscured, if it was like a longer, if they tried to make it more complex, if it was more like Magnolia, where it gets, tries to get in depth on each one of these individual characters, you probably would have lost the movie and all that. And I probably would have gone back to watch it again just because I'd be confused. But this was. Yeah. It was very concise. It made its points. I don't need to watch it again because I got everything from that first viewing. I'm not saying I'm yeah. never going to see it again.
I mean, the other one besides Birdman, when we talk about the Oscars, it was really contentious, and it didn't win anything besides Patricia Arquette getting supporting is Boyhood. That's the one that people walked out of and said, why did I have to see that? You know, like yeah. I just spent 2 hours and 45 minutes watching this kid grow up, really? Like, I don't know what that's like.
That's right.
Like, I've had a or, oh, big deal, you shot it over 12 years. Nice gimmick, you know? Right. It's like,
I think
those
it was
are
more of a gimmick movie than anything else. You yeah. know, just watching that movie when I watched it personally, it was like, okay, you know, it's interesting that they followed through with this movie and, you know, took the time to actually shoot it, you know, the right way. And I mean,
but you didn't enjoy it, right?
Yeah, it, well, overall, it just was a dry movie, you know? I mean,
yeah. I mean, that one's very European. I mean, that feels like, you know, 400 Blows. That feels like the 7 Up documentary series. That yeah. feels, you know, yeah. I mean, it's yeah, just, yeah. It's a family, you know, drama kind of thing. And you right. just kind of follow people around and that's it. You know, no big profound yeah. things. It's just observational.
Well, I thought that, maybe I don't know much about video editing in general, but the category came up and Chris and I were watching it and I was calling him out. Like
Aaron was nailing all the technical ones.
Because that's
going to Vegas next year.
Yeah. That was a section that we happened to catch. But they did editing and I was like, oh, that's got to be Birdman because there had to have been a lot of, there's certainly a lot of trickery in the way that they edit the scenes together because it all flows like right. it's one continuous yeah. camera take. But it ended up going to Whiplash, which I watched actually afterwards that night and then realized yeah. why, because that yeah. is just stunning. That's yeah. Even if you didn't pay attention to the plot and just yeah. watched the scenes in the movie and listened to the music, mm-hmm. fascinating movie.
Yeah. Just after I saw it and I walked out, I go, that will win. That should win the editing award. Like right. this was back in September or, you know, November or something when I saw this movie. And I just like that. Forget it. It's over, you know, and because it's like you said, when you see it, you see how they use sound and how they use yeah. image and how they put it together. And especially like, I guess for lack of better term, the drum battle at the end of the film, mm-hmm. it's just like there's no dialogue, but you don't need it, you know, and it's just in that cut and in the soundtrack. And it's killer. The other one, you know, people are going to talk about Oscar snubs. That's always the fun one, right? You know, like, oh, okay. This should have been nominated, that should have been nominated, or this should have won, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And the one that I was kind of amazed by that didn't get nominated for animated film was the Lego Movie.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Yeah.
Best picture.
Yeah, why didn't it even get up there as a choice?
I mean, I figured it would at least be in the animated category because, what was it, like 10, 15 years ago, they decided to splinter off animated feature as its own thing. Right. Because before then, it was only included in the run for Best Picture. And people thought, well, that's not really fair because it's kind of hard to judge a live performance against a drawn one or now a computered one. And so they created that category, and I was like, oh, the Lego Movie, yeah, that'll get, you know, that'll be nominated in that category. No.
Yeah.
I was like, what
happened?
That
was hilarious, Neil Patrick Harris dropping that joke.
Yeah, and I
saw... Couple years.
Big Hero 6 wasn't bad. I took my son to go see that. We both enjoyed, enjoyed parts of that movie, but the Lego Movie was better.
Everything is Awesome, to me, is one of the darkest songs ever written.
Yeah.
Like, it is, I know that it's it was partly produced by Mark Mothersbaugh.
Yeah.
And it totally reminds me of, like, a modern, dancey, updated version of Beautiful World.
Yeah, like, yeah. Oh, totally.
Where it's like, everything is great, but not for you. You know, right. Kind of thing.
That's perfect. I didn't even think about that.
But the other bit was, when you talk about the Lego Movie, it is like the most, I think it's the most subversive kids film I've seen since WALL-E.
Yeah, I agree. You know, agreed.
Where,
I agree too.
Yeah, I mean, you just look at WALL-E, which to me is sort of a kid's version of Idiocracy to a certain extent, and and the at the very end and all this stuff. I mean, they're like in the whole movie, they're like bringing down commercialism and consumerism, and you know, and disconnection thanks to technology and everything. And I was like, wow, that's subversive. And then I go see the Lego Movie, and I go, what did Karl Marx write this script? Because I remember there was a piece in Fox News is going, oh, the Lego Movie's anti-capitalist. And I go, I guess you could see it that way, because it's the guy who's the construction worker, and yeah, all of his proletariat workaday friends all get together to take on the president, who happens to be also the head of the corporation.
Right.
So it's like the working class rises up against the owner class. Yeah, that's Marxism right there. It's, you know, but the other thing that I thought was interesting was the little riffs on culture that are in there in terms of reality TV and consumerism. And then the idea in the end that, you know, well, you have to build things by the instructions. That's how you do it, right? You know, and all the pieces have to be in the right place and everything. And then it's like, no, actually, the best thing is creativity, you know, to have all of the ability to move stuff wherever you want it for your own enjoyment.
Which
so,
is funny, because like I've had, before we went to see the movie, I've had these conversations with my son. He's way into Legos, had to build it by the instructions, and I would always make arguments for why we should build something else.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the ability to have both. You know, I think in the end is what comes out is sometimes you need to follow the instructions, and sometimes it's good to have the creativity and put the two together. And,
right.
You know, like I said, I just thought it was really, you know, it had like some kind of subversive elements in there.
Those guys are doing, they're doing an Adventure Time movie too. They're doing an Adventure Time feature length that the guys who produced the Lego Movie are going to do.
Cool.
So you heard it here?
The other one that I would...
One thing that I wanted to say real quick about this, though.
Yeah.
Maybe the reason it got snubbed at the Oscars, because it has such a strong presence in the direct-to-DVD market. There's a shit ton of Lego Movies out already and stuff that's coming out in coming years. Maybe they just didn't see it as like the same caliber.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what movie they were watching. So,
Who knows? But
then again, I don't go see a lot of kids' films, so... You know, the other animated films I might not go see, you know.
Right.
But
what was the other one?
I mean, personally, for me, the snub that I was a little sad about was, and I have a personal kind of a connection to this through the show, is Jodorowsky's Dune, which I put as one of the reviews that I've done for you guys.
Yes, you did.
And it was like shortlisted. It was a shortlisted film, but it didn't make the cut of the final five. And then Citizen 4 won, which even like it would have been nice for my friend Steven and his crew who produced that documentary to be able to, you know, be there, you know, to get that nomination. But even if I was voting, I still sadly would have had to go, I got to vote for Citizen 4, because Citizen 4 is an amazing documentary.
Yeah.
And I think it's playing on HBO or somewhere. And if you get a chance, you should check it out.
Yeah, I didn't think they'd make that movie on HBO. You know, I mean, I thought it hits pretty hard. And, I mean, you can see how he's on edge the whole time.
Yeah, I mean it's funny in there, because one of the news anchors that you hear on the TV, because basically the whole film takes place in a hotel room.
Oh, right.
Says something like, once Edward Snowden, because this is what the documentary is about Edward Snowden and all those NSA leaks, is the one news anchor says, he goes, it's like, it sounds like something out of a Jean Le Carré novel, which in a way, like even the film feels that way, even though it's a documentary, it feels like a spy thriller or something.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even like, you know, you see the reporter that was helping out Edward Snowden, you know, with his, you know, hiding and everything else, but, you know, how the paparazzi was following him just to find Edward Snowden in the hotel was like, you know, he's under a microscope.
Yeah.
The whole time.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing. And like I said, that one was definitely one of the best things I saw last year.
Yeah. One of the better documentaries I've seen in a while.
Yeah. So, I mean, the Oscars kind of, you know, I mean, I'll say that I wasn't paying all that much attention because I was getting fed free champagne and I had some gal who's
that's nice.
Kind of flirting with me. So
I
enjoyed myself, although I heard that they had the worst ratings in the past 7 years on this Oscar telecast.
Really?
People just didn't care. They didn't tune in. So
not good for NPH.
Hey, WWE Fastlane was on.
Well, not when you have, like... everybody updating it in real time on their whatever page.
Or just fire up Twitter.
Yeah.
You don't even have to sit through all the speeches and shit.
Yeah. So, you know, I just always find the ceremony just pomposity. I thought it was hilarious when I was at this event and I overheard someone say, well, the gay Olympics are about to start. I thought that was hilarious.
Nice.
I've heard it called the gay Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was it, the gay Super Bowl. Yeah. So I just find it hilarious to watch just how ridiculous it is. And I keep hoping for crazy moments like Roberto Benigni winning and like climbing over all the seats or something or, you know.
Yeah.
Just you always want, you know, someone to fall or, you know, say something dumb or, I mean, that's really what you watch. It's kind of like NASCAR. You're just watching for the crashes, I guess.
Exactly.
Hope it's somebody got way too drunk.
Oh, yeah.
And wins an award.
That's the Golden Globes.
If you like what we do and you would like to show your support for us, you can donate to Christopher Media by using the PayPal button on ChristopherMedia.net. Please click through the Amazon banner and bookmark the page. It won't cost you anything extra, and when you buy something, it will help to show your support for Christopher Media. If you're looking to launch your own website, please click through the HostGator banner at ChristopherMedia.net. That's who we use to host all of the Christopher Media shows. When you sign up for HostGator by clicking through our link, you are helping to support ChristopherMedia.net. DraftKings.com, daily fantasy sports leagues, no season-long commitments. You can enter free or paid contests and win your share of over $200 million in prizes. When you click through the DraftKings banner at ChristopherMedia.net, you'll get a free first-time deposit bonus when you sign up for DraftKings.com.
I was chatting with Chris on Facebook or something recently and wanted to talk to you guys. Instead of having put a review in this week, I thought that what I would do is actually talk to you about stoner films a little bit.
Yeah.
And get your take on it because, you know, I find something fascinating, and I noticed this about 10 years ago, well, I wasn't paying that much attention, is sort of the evolution of the stoner film and... you know, people who are characters who are actually smoking pot. This is what I'm talking about.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you go back to what, the 30s, Reefer Madness, right? Ooh, you know, you smoke weed, you're going to turn into a crazy maniac. So really, you don't get into stoner films where people are smoking pot all that much, at least out in the open, until the 70s. And then you have the Cheech and Chong films, and they're just slackers. And layabouts, and they have no real like overarching goal besides like kind of like getting over and being in a band in a couple of the films. That's really about it.
Right.
Yeah.
But then we get
about
up
scoring.
To, there you go.
Yeah.
But then you get up to maybe what is it like the early 2000s, and we're introduced to Harold and Kumar, and they're stoners, but they're like high-end educated guys. They're like, one's trying to be a doctor and the other's trying, I can't remember, nuclear physicist. I don't know. I can't remember. But they're definitely not like layabouts.
Right.
So we've moved from weed makes you into crazed demons to weed and slackers to weed and achievers, you know, that you
right.
can actually
yeah.
be an achiever in society and still smoke pot. So I just think that's a fascinating little timeline there.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Harold and Kumar, there's still a lot of wackiness. There's a lot of stupidity. I mean, riding the cheetah and shit.
Yeah.
There's a lot of just ridiculous
you
shit
know,
in
Kumar
that movie.
Just makes poor decisions.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, right. That's what we were talking about. He's just really impulsive. He's not stupid. He's not like doing this. Well, I mean, he's maybe doing it. He's riding a cheetah because he's
like
stoned.
Stone. Yeah. It's stoner impulse.
but you also, you kind of get out of the movie that it's just not in reality either.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
it doesn't take
say,
place in our reality.
No, I mean, I wouldn't even say that Cheech and Chong to a certain extent takes place in our reality, because if you watch Up in Smoke, which I just did recently,
yeah.
The guy plays his dad, who plays Chong's dad in the beginning, looks about 5 years older than him.
Yeah, so, no, right. Oh, yeah.
And he's yelling at him like, you got to go to high school. You know, you got to graduate. And it's like, the dude's got a full beard and he's 40. What are you talking about? So.
Yeah, I'm starting to, like, the older I get and I see Cheech and Chong, I don't know, the more I'm just starting to want,
Yeah, it's kind of a, I kind of,
you know what it
off.
Is? It they've become, in a way, sadly, like Foster Brooks. And this is such an old reference, you'd have to ask your grandmother.
Yeah. Right?
I know who you're talking about.
I have no idea.
He used to be on TV and in the movies, like, in the 40s and 50s, and he used to play a drunk.
Okay.
And it was funny because he was a drunk, you know, and all this.
Yeah, his whole shtick was acting drunk.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, like, it's become the same thing where it's like, hey, we're stoned. It's like, yeah, well, it was funny for a while, and now it's just lame.
It's stereotypical.
You know, and now it's... Whoa, huh? No, go ahead.
No, just talking about weed and movies. I know that you were specifically talking about movies where marijuana is a big part of their character or their motivation, but it's also popping up a little bit more casually in movies that aren't, where it's not part of the central theme. And Rob, you saw John Wick, right? You were talking about that. Yeah. There's. It's not a big scene, but the one guy who is like the head of the mafia or whatever they call themselves, he finds out that his son's basically dead. And what does he do? He sits down and he rolls up a really fat doobie.
Right.
And he smokes it.
Yeah, and he shares it. Yeah.
You know, he doesn't go crazy after that.
No.
He just wants to relax. It's kind of sneaking into movies in that way.
I remember a movie...
It doesn't have to be a big deal just because somebody's whipping out a joint.
Right.
A movie that I saw like 15 years ago, and for someone who doesn't see movies, with me whipping out this movie is kind of surprising.
But, yeah.
Was a Wonder Boys with Michael Douglas and...
Wonder Boys.
Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
Michael Douglas is a big head through the whole movie. You know, he's got his big bag of pot, and, you know, he's...
Yeah, he's a writer.
Tobey Maguire wants to try it. He tells him easy with that. That stuff's not for beginners. And, and it's like... Yeah. It's actually really central to the whole plot, and you wouldn't really think it is.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
But it's not... Yeah, but that was more of a... It was a flaw in his character than just something that he did.
And then at the end, he gave it to the janitor.
Right. He gave the weed to the janitor.
Yeah, he was like,
I don't remember the movie that well.
He's like, hey, you want to get high? And the janitor's like,
there's a bear shit in the woods.
I'm a fucking janitor.
Well, the thing has always been is that there was always the stoner character that was usually, you know, the comic relief. Or they were the unreliable witness.
Yeah.
Like, there would be, like, the kid outside smoking a joint and, like, a crime would happen.
Oh, right.
And it would be like, Johnny the Stoner saw the murder. And it's like, oh, we can't trust Johnny the Stoner.
Yeah,
so it's like, it's just interesting to see, like, these stereotypes really is what it is, you know, and sort of how they've, like I said, I think now it's come to a point, as you were saying, it's just casual, like in John Wick. Or you have, you know, even though there's wacky shit that goes on in Harold and Kumar, to me, they're still strivers. You know, they're going to school for these high-end degrees and all this stuff.
Right.
And it's like, if you did that movie in the 70s, it just would have been two guys who, like, followed the Grateful Dead around or something. You know, it wouldn't...
Harold worked at a record store.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It would have been, like, High Fidelity with stoners.
Yeah.
You know?
And yeah.
You know, so it's just interesting to see how it evolves, because I think eventually you're going to get to a point... It might take another 10 years, 15 years, where it'll just be, you know, you can just have that scene in a film and no one will think about it. Like someone offering someone a beer or something. Like, hey, you want a beer? Yeah, sure. Okay. You know, and then it'll just be that. It won't be sinister and clandestine and all this.
Right.
Well, you sent me that thing the other day. I think it was today or yesterday about something like, isn't it like 80-something percent of conservative millennials favor legalization?
Yeah, so there was a poll that was done. I think it was in conjunction with the CPAC, which is the Conservative Political Action Committee meeting. And they found that, yeah, it was some huge number. I think it was north of 67% or something of millennial members of the GOP, you know, so kids who are, under 30, think that legalization is the way to go.
There you go, kids.
Yep.
So
you don't need to convince the left. The left's already down.
Right.
And once again, maybe it is, and I'm going to extrapolate this here, maybe it is Harold and Kumar in a way, culturally, that has spoken to that idea that you can be a striver and still have that, much the way that, and I know he's, you know, persona non grata right now, much the way that people said that it's the Cosby Show that helped to acclimate white America to professional black men, therefore allowing 25 years later Barack Obama to get elected.
Right.
So just the idea of if you look in the culture and you try to see a moment or a thing that could possibly explain 10, 15, 20 years out where the attitude shifted.
That's a real good fucking point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, beyond all that, let's just the thing I wanted to open it to you guys is what do you watch when you're lit? Like what are your stoner picks? What do you like to watch?
If I'm getting high, I usually want to watch a cheesy action flick of some sort. I have a soft spot for movies like the Fast and Furious movies, Mission Impossible.
I find it hilarious, but anyway.
And any Die Hard. It really does not matter. Shit like that. Or like John Wick is a perfect example of, you know.
Oh, I love John Wick.
I went
to the theater to see that not knowing what I was getting into and walked away and go, it had a couple of flat moments, but I was like, overall, that's great.
Yeah. It's
your boy Keanu.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a fantastic action movie, but
Yeah, it's a curveball, man, for sure. Yeah,
it's just got the right amount of attitude to it, I guess.
And I like to laugh. I like we talked about Dude, Where's My Car earlier. I mean, that's about right.
Yeah, I don't know. I never really enjoyed that movie.
3-star or less comedies. You know,
yeah, I have no really problem. Really bad kind of comedies.
I have no problem with 4 or 5, but I'm generally, you know,
yeah,
3-star or less. And if I'm disappointed by your movie must really be a piece of shit. I'm just putting that out there. If I'm going, this movie sucks, your movie must be fucking awful. But that's just me.
Yeah, I mean, for myself personally, I mean, I watch a lot of different types of movies. But if I'm getting, you know, I've watched documentaries. And,
right,
you know,
like, yeah.
One of the big ones I watched was, what was it, the one that was about in Afghanistan there with the news reporter that was doing the investigation into the villages in Afghan. I'm trying to remember what it was, but it was basically, I mean, when you get into like high detail and it's like engaging you on a level where you almost feel like you're there,
right.
That's what pulls me in. Like when you're that high and it's like, holy shit, I feel like I'm in it. I feel like I'm in the movie.
No,
I feel
like, that's cool.
Yeah. So Aaron and I like to turn off our brains.
No, yeah,
you,
sure.
Not so much.
Right. I feel like I'm in it. Like I'm investigating something, you know?
Yeah, you like a challenge where I like something that's very easy to watch.
But I can watch that too because, I mean, it's fun to watch that stuff, you know? Yeah.
I'm not saying that's all. Well, of course, it's not all that I watch.
Right.
I'm not always super stoned.
No, but I mean, yeah.
Oh, Rob, same question always to you now.
Yeah, what's your...
Yeah, I think I talked about this before, but I have a tendency to basically pass out, like, when I get high. Like, I get really...
Right, yeah, yeah.
I so, get really, like, watch the inside of your eyelids, right?
Rob has selected none.
So, no, so... and it doesn't matter what kind of strain it is. It just seems that it's, you know, it just happens to me that I end up passing out. It's either that or it's by virtue that it's usually late at night. But, I've actually been watching a lot of. I find that I can focus on, like serial TV better, And which is funny because I don't really watch TV. I usually watch movies. So what I do is I go to Netflix and I end up watching either episodes of Aqua Teen Hunger Force. I plowed through both seasons of the Marc Maron show, nice. Which I enjoyed. And then I also find that stand-up comedy seems to work for me.
Hey, yeah. Back in the day, I used to watch like Saturday Night Live and stuff all the time.
Yeah. So, and I think it might just be like an attention span thing. And I have, like I said, this thing where it's like, I'm going to end up passing out, so I should probably not watch anything longer than 20 minutes.
Yeah, right.
Hey, you know what? You got to know your strengths. All right. You got to know your limits.
Yeah, you got to know when to say when.
Yeah, that's what right. I like when I drink and try and watch a movie. But it doesn't even matter what I'm drinking, beer, liquor, mm-hmm. wine. I have a couple glasses and I will pass out in the middle of a movie.
Yeah, said the guy who slept through New Year's this year.
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Dead Poets Society is the movie. One film I've never been able to see all the way through. and I believe that it holds a very... That the universe knows that this film holds a very profound truth that I need to take in, but I am not ready to see it. And I've told people this story, and they said, no, you're not missing anything. Believe me, it's okay. I saw it in the theater, fell asleep, woke up the credits. A friend of mine rented it, fell asleep in the middle, woke up at the credits. And then I tried to watch it at home, same thing, fell asleep, woke up at the credits. So there's something in the middle of that film before the credits that I guess is a profound truth that I have yet to receive.
I have the same kind of experience with that movie, so it's okay. I don't think I've ever seen it either. I think I've seen the front half of that movie a shitload of times. Mm-hmm. I think I slept through it in school a couple times.
nothing against the late, great Robin Williams, and speaking of which, if you want to see a great film with him recently, and if it's still on Netflix Instant, you should watch it, is World's Greatest Dad.
I heard that's a dark-ass movie.
Yeah. It's dark, yeah, but it's see that great. One. It is good. And I got to say, Bobcat Goldthwait has become a very interesting director between that film and God Bless America. Yeah. Oof. Real dark. Really?
I have to check these movies out then.
Yeah. But I like Shakes the Clown, too. I mean, I was one of the few people that liked that like when I saw it in the late 90s.
That has its moments.
Yeah. So, he's a twisted guy, but I like it.
The time has come for this.
That's it. Now you mix it up.
And I don't think this card requires time. Delicious green matter.
Oh, isn't that great?
When you're in survival mode, you gotta eat robot.
That sounds disgusting.
Is what it is.
Yeah.
We're stoners and we get high and we talk about food.
Gotta talk about
it. No, it's called The Munchies.
Oh, The Munchies.
That's the name of the segment.
Oh, okay. Hey, it's The Munchies.
This week's munchie that we just enjoyed was a classic, a grilled cheese sandwich.
Yeah, I don't think you get any better than that.
It's a stoner staple. Doesn't take much. It's hard to fuck it up, although we tried.
Yeah. Well, we experimented a little bit, and we learned a lesson, but let's not get to that just yet, because one of the great things about a grilled cheese sandwich is how easy it is to make, how cheap the ingredients are. It's a fairly easy meal to put together if you want something hot and you're tired of eating ramen noodles and you're poor, or you're just really stoned and you don't really want to operate a knife, well, a sharp one at least. Or maybe you have to operate the butter knife.
Maybe you ate all of the ramen noodles.
Or maybe you ate all the ramen noodles. And another cool thing is that you can customize it. You know, you get to choose your own bread. There's many different cheeses in the world for you to pick from, right?
Yep.
Yes.
I like spicy cheese sometimes, and Pepper Jack makes a good grilled cheese. There was a restaurant, a bar actually, that I used to go to that used to throw tomato in them and make them on this thick bread. And they called that a Tommy Tomato, so I've stolen that idea. So, yeah, I've stolen that idea and throw tomato into mine every once in a while. And, you know, sometimes mix the cheeses up if I have a couple different cheeses laying around. Chris, you had the idea. You went somewhere where they had, like, Texas toast.
Yeah, I went to, it was an idea I stole it, and I'm not claiming any originality for this idea at all. I straight up stole this idea from a restaurant in Brooklyn, New York, called Bad Burger. It's in the Williamsburg section of Brooklyn, but it's Texas toast made with garlic butter instead of the regular butter.
It's good.
Your cheese, your bacon, your tomato slice. And who'd have thought Texas toast and garlic butter? I mean, it was...
So the one that you had...
The slight modification made it so delicious.
Right. Mm-hmm. See, the one that you had had bacon and tomato on it as well. Ah, I see.
Does our exchange now make sense?
It does, yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Well, because I thought we were just kind of... We were spitballing ideas of what to put in grilled cheese, and I was throwing out ideas thinking of different sandwiches, and Chris was thinking of one amazing sandwich that all of it would go into, obviously.
Nice. Yeah, and I mean, one of my guys, like, this only has tomato and cheese on it. He's like, well, yeah. I'm like,
a little bit of miscommunication on there.
But either way, it was still awesome.
It was. I ate both of mine right away. Yeah. But yeah, we had one with the pepper jack cheese and bacon, and the other one had cheddar cheese and tomato. Only Rob doesn't like tomato, so he ate his more traditionally. But you did get a taste of what the Texas toast and the garlic butter were like.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I mean,
which if anyone's going to try it out there, just a little bit of warning based on what we experienced. Garlic burns fast; it burns at a low temperature, and you tend to need a little bit more heat to get that cheese melted, because of the thickness of the Texas toast. So we kind of improvised it, basically fry it until just about it was going to burn, and then flipped it into the microwave and zapped it for a little bit to get that cheese melted.
Brown the sandwich in the pan and then finish the job in the microwave.
You could try that. I think if I was to try this again, or when I try this again, because I think this was a semi-successful experiment, that I would set the temperature a little bit lower, maybe butter up the pan a little bit with some regular butter just to keep more of a coating between it, and put a cover on it so the heat is trapped and melts the cheese faster.
Which, by the way, guys, we are just fulfilling like 100 stoner stereotypes right now.
What? Talking about grilled cheese?
We're just in this segment and like the... You know, it sounds like a really bad cooking show. Well, next time I'm going to...
Yeah, I don't like throw anything really in mine.
But I'm okay with the stereotype. Yeah. You know, like I'm sure black guys are okay with the really big penis stereotype. I'm sure that's one that they're fine with. Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah,
that's you don't hear the response. People, you know, that's actually a misnomer.
Yeah. They're like, sure, huge cocks.
Yeah, so grilled cheese, easy to make, which actually a little bit of the history of the grilled cheese. It's just a grilled cheese sandwich, right? And so... it's really just a grilled version of the cheese sandwich. Now, I have a cheese sandwich. Kind of sounds repulsive to me.
Cheese sandwich is horrible on its own.
Bread?
No, thank you.
And some butter. I mean, not even butter. So just bread and cheese, basically.
Yeah, no thanks.
That's what you do when you're poor and you don't have a heating element.
Well, that's what brought the grilled cheese to popularity is the Depression, the Great Depression. And people were getting like government subsidized cheese and fairly inexpensive bread for the time, I guess. And it was an easy thing to make. And you could even make it, you know, over a fire, you know, if you have like a trash can fire somewhere. With a bunch of bums with fingerless gloves warming their hands around it. Make a grilled cheese on that shit. You can make it with an iron. Like in Benny and June.
I have seen that.
Yeah, you remember that? You ever seen that movie, Rob? That was one of my favorite movies when I was in high school. No. Benny and June.
No. I've heard of that method before.
Oh, yeah. We can make sandwiches.
It's not too many songs about sandwiches.
Nice. Plus,
it's a little local flavor.
It is Detroit Grand Poobahs. It's Brian Gillespie in Paris.
And I can be the burger girl. It says nothing about cheese at any point.
No.
So we can make sandwiches.
I looked it up on Wikipedia. It said that the grilled cheese was originally made as an open sandwich.
And we can make sandwiches.
So they were just like frying a piece of bread, throwing a piece of cheese on it. I mean, come on. If somebody threw that at me, I'd be like, what the fuck is this shit?
Finish. Finish?
Yeah, you forgot to finish your sandwich.
And continue?
It also says in here that in addition to cheese, it may also include butter or mayonnaise. Oh, Mm-hmm. Now, butter is essential for grilling it. I guess you could grill with mayo, right?
Come on, ponies. Who here I don't likes know about party? That one.
Yeah. Have you ever grilled anything on the stove with mayo?
No.
No.
Hell no. Good Lord, no.
Yeah.
That sounds awful.
It does yeah. sound awful, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I think this is really it's like a British tradition that we've continued on with like horrible sandwiches.
Want some mayonnaise? Parties are all off the hook. I never planned them, but...
Weird Al is the voice of a pony, apparently, singing a song about a cheese sandwich in this clip.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in this one episode. He is not a regular...
Oh, Aaron's like, oh, whoa, I've seen this. What are you... He has a young daughter.
I'm not a brony.
I forget about this.
I have a young daughter. She loves this shit.
Come on, kid. Take it for a spin.
Golly, thanks, mister.
Weird Al, recent Grammy winner.
Yeah,
Weird Al.
That's right.
Hmm. Yeah, he beat out like Sarah Silverman and Patton Oswalt and like Louis C.K. Like he beat out like a hell of a list of comedians.
He did. Yeah. Grammy. That would have been a tough one.
How much does it piss those guys off? I lost to fucking Weird Al.
No. It wasn't the Grammy. That was the Oscars. He won an Oscar.
Weird Al did not win an Oscar. He won a Grammy.
We were watching the Grammys.
No, we were watching the Oscars. The Grammys, Weird Al won a Grammy.
Never mind. Edit.
You guys ready to get paid?
I have no idea what's going on.
Whatever. Why would Weird Al win an Oscar? I don't know. Yeah, who would say such a thing?
You just did. All right. Well, thank you for listening, liking, and sharing the Weedsman podcast on Facebook. And thanks for all of the new followers on Twitter at TheWeedsman420.
Thanks for the support.
You can subscribe to the Weedsman podcast on iTunes for free by clicking through the iTunes banner at ChristopherMedia.net. Android users, you can find this show on Stitcher Radio. I think we've agreed that's the way to go for Android.
It's either Stitcher or the podcast app for the Apple devices. It's the only two I use.
You can now listen to a new episode of a Christopher Media show every day of the week. Sundays, M&M Question Everything. Monday and Thursday, you have Unregimented. Tuesday, you get the Weedman Podcast Nugget.
The bonus nugget.
Yeah, it's a little extra. And it prepares you for the big show on Friday. Sometimes on Tuesdays, you get the Toddzilla X-Pod. On Wednesdays, you have the Oddcast with Jenna and John. You also have the Projection Booth with soon-to-be-published author Rob St. Mary. Mike White also. He has books on Amazon. Go check them out. Last year, 2014, a lot of big things for the Projection Booth. They were recognized by the AV Club,
Top-rated podcast.
IndieWire.com. Check them out on Wednesdays. Saturday, we have the Captain's Table finishing out the week.
If you enjoy this show and want more people to know about it, head on over to iTunes, leave a comment, and rate it 5 stars. Make sure you like and share us on Facebook, and don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Just search for Christopher Media. Thank you in advance for supporting Christopher Media by clicking on the PayPal button and by clicking through to all the sponsors who support ChristopherMedia.net. Most importantly, we would like to take the time to extend an extra special thanks to you. Christopher Media could not exist without your support. Thank you for visiting ChristopherMedia.net, and thank you for listening. Christopher Media. Let's make some noise.